Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of MSP 1337, where we're going to talk this week about security awareness and skills training. Maybe it's just skills training and skills and awareness training. And I've got Jim Harriman with Kinetic Technology Group with me today. Been with us before. Jim, welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure.
We had our end of month call yesterday with the Secure Outcomes Integrator members, and it got brought up. We were talking a little bit about skills awareness or security awareness and skills training. And you brought up some things that we'll get to here in a second. But we decided to take a look at the CIS Navigator, and we happened to pick one that if you look at the Navigator, it has all the CIS controls, and then it shows you how they map to other frameworks. And it just so happens that security awareness and skills training has a really in-depth mapping to CJIS, or the Criminal Justice Information Security. And what is interesting about it is it has levels of maturity or different levels of training that someone has gone through to show their maturity process for what they're being tasked with. And I thought it was interesting. Obviously, we talked about it a little bit yesterday that we don't really see a lot of that in the vendor platforms and the tools and services we consume. It's not like you start out as a sixth grader in middle school and then it shows your progress through graduating high school in the security awareness training. But to some extent, how do you know that those that you're providing this training to, and of course, this is called out in the Trustmark, it's not actually called out in CIS, like, how do you measure success with your staff? Because, you know, we were talking about this before we started the call, like, if they're technical, here's your security awareness training. Skip the video, go answer the questions, right? And to some extent, you're like, and I expect you to get them right, whether you watch the video or not, because this is a pretty, for someone who's technical, this should be pretty easy stuff. But then in our conversation we had yesterday, we kind of kept going back and forth on the different challenges. Like, well, what happens when you're in that staff meeting and the three people that are not technical are like, well, why do we have to do that? Why is that important? And so I think, And I want you to share, but I think there's two things that I want to cover today that make security awareness and skills training really important. Number one is whether you're a technical person or not, if you don't understand the why, the probability of it being followed well is not very high. And the second one is if we're not measuring growth, especially when we get into the skills training, then how do we show evidence to those that are either our clients or maybe our vendors, our insurance providers, and even our own, you know, the rest of our team, that we are in fact qualified to say, sit behind the wheel and drive it down the road?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to the why, I mean, that's been, I think, the biggest challenge across all the MSPs that I've worked with over the last several years, getting buy-in from staff as to why we're going through a framework now, why we're doing all these things to begin with. And so communicating that and getting buy-in is not a real easy thing to do other than trying to just force feed it and you know, bully people into it effectively, right? So, I mean, that at least that's how I felt initially. And then I'm like, you know, I just got to get them involved. I got to take them on the same journey that I'm going on with this and start engaging them on the day-to-day and show them exactly how these frameworks and these things that I'm trying to implement really do impact and have a very direct connection to their day-to-day jobs, right? And what they've been hired to do within our organization and in support of our clients. And so that has been a challenge, and it has been a slow process over the last several years that we've been doing it. And so communicating it is not always other than just, you know, like a parent, because I said, yeah, so, right?
But why?
because I said so. But again, taking them along for the journey and getting people involved at the various stages, you know, whether they're, you know, in our company, I mean, I've got a security team of six people now. I mean, that's like half my company, right? I mean, it's pretty amazing. And they're all engaged in that, right?
And the other half, you don't call them that because you don't want to pay them that, but they also are on the security team too.
Right, exactly. So, but even, you know, to our, you know, our sales or business development folks, to our finance person, you know, all the way to, you know, people that are configuring devices, it's like, we're implementing all these steps. And the person that's configuring the device is like, well, why do I need to do this? Well,
yeah,
it's because, you know, these things are hardening the configuration of what we're doing. So, you know, it's funny because in practice, we're doing a lot of these things, but now when we get into the training aspect of it, it becomes a completely different dynamic, right? How do we take this and establish a realistic program for a company of our size, number one,
sure,
with material that is not just, you know, thrown together in, you know, Word docs or G sheets or whatever, and really make it somewhat interesting and, you know, bearing that expense. And so that's kind of weird.
So I want to touch on that first before we jump to something else. But, you know, I had someone share with me the other day. We're talking about the different programs that are out there that you can buy through vendors, and some of them don't scale very well, right? Like if you're buying something that says, oh, it's $10 or $15 a seat for the training program per month, and you have 9,000 employees, that might not be palatable budget wise, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, to your point, at your organizational size, you probably start to feel some of the friction from a cost standpoint as that scales, because a lot of these programs weren't built for organizations that are large. They were built for organizations that are small to ensure that they're getting that sort of the minimum threshold that makes sense for them to be having, you know, different clients per that cost. And it got me thinking, like, because we see these patterns emerging with products like Credly that show you the badging and the certifications, and you see, you know, Udemy and IT Pro TV, they all have these different strategies around earmarking that you have satisfied that particular program. But like, you don't necessarily know, well, who authorized them to do that? Like, what's their background? Are they educators? Like, did they go to school to put together learning objectives for my team? And I'm not saying this to downplay any of them, but it just got me thinking, like, we rely more and more on a model that follows more of that traditional education system to make sure that our employees and our clients are in fact learning what they need to protect the data that they're responsible for on a day-to-day basis, and no more of this, it's IT's responsibility or it's IT's problem. It's a sysadmin. He takes care of that. So that got me thinking about some of the things you said, like, how do you make this engaging and how do you sort of measure that you're being successful with that, you know, kind of going from the why to the proof?
Yeah, it's that is a completely different scale to measure, right? I mean, especially on the growth side, because like you mentioned, most of the products that are available to us in our industry that we present to our clients are very linear. There's not a lot of there's just not a lot of ways to gauge someone's knowledge and maturity in a level. And you know, when it comes to, you know, our clients and things of that nature, I mean, we all know that they're focused on certain things. And for a lot of them, it is very, very much so a checkbox for an organization, right? I mean, you look at an ad agency and it's like, okay, I need to just answer these questions, watch this video and move on. I don't know that it's as necessary to gauge somebody's growth in cybersecurity awareness there as it is within our own organizations, right? And there are going to be exceptions to that. I mean, anytime we're dealing with a client that has regulatory standards that they have to meet, you know, sure, compliance standards that they have to meet and stuff like that. But, you know, I think
that all rolls uphill too, right? Like, hey, if they're exactly bound by regulatory now, sort of it may imply you are.
Right. I think where I'm heading and what I kind of touched on with our conversation yesterday was, I really think that we have to reevaluate this from not just a checkbox on a cybersecurity questionnaire or whatever, but that it is, and it will start with us as the managed service provider. And then what we do is we can then take that stuff and instead of sending out all the things that we've been doing is actually take what we're developing and training our own staff on and changing that into something that we are then providing to our clients on top of what we're already doing or supplementing it in some way or finding some other avenues in which to raise the bar on the training for that when it's needed, when it's necessary. But the fact is that it is necessary in our industry, in our organizations, as the provider of these services, we have to get better at this for sure.
So I feel like you took the proof side of this and then you made it go back to the why. Like, I think there's two proof questions in this question. So there's the proof of like showing evidence that this is happening, but then there's the proof that I think you just hit on, like the proof as to why we're doing this, right? Like, so for example, the thing that comes to mind for me is, what's the outcome that I expect my employees to gain by watching this video and answering these questions? And I think if you just say like, so they don't click on the link and, you know, become a victim of fraud. Well, of course, no one wants them to click on the link and become a victim of fraud, but we also don't want them to be living in fear that every link that comes into their email is also malicious. To a degree, right? Like we want them to have that sort of be sensitive to it, don't be desensitized to it. And so that had me kind of walking down this path of like, okay, what am I really trying to achieve? Well, I'm trying to achieve that we always stay with our doors open. We're not a victim of ransomware and fill in the blank, data exfiltration, you name it. And I go, okay, well, how do I articulate that to an employee? Like, hey, this training that we're doing is about don't fall victim to the, you know, click this link so you can put in your credentials. I think those are becoming easier and easier to avoid, largely because we recognize that our bank is not going to send us an email to click on a link to change our passwords. We're learning those things are not likely going to happen. So you can have a level of scrutiny that ends in, you can still get to the desired result if in fact you're supposed to change your password by going out to the website or going out and finding the phone number and not just following what maybe shows up via email. Right. But I think it goes beyond that, right? Like, so if we go into more of the things that are less specific, like what happens when, you know, Jim, I get an email that says, hey, you need to transfer money or you need to make these changes. They're more tactical in approach. They don't actually have links in them. They tell you to do things and it sounds like it's coming from Jim or it's coming from someone in your company. Now this is getting harder because we all want to be helpful to those that are reaching out to us. How do you navigate that one?
Man, we actually had a very well done phishing email come into my CFO.
Okay.
Last week, from somebody he didn't know, but it had a thread that appeared to have me in it, telling them to contact him and everything. I mean, everything was very well written and it just was well put together. And he's like, hey, who's this? And I'm like, I've never heard of them before. And he's like, well, I got this email. And I'm like, well, let me look at it. So I went over to his office. I'm looking at it. I'm like, man, this is actually really, really good. And it was just a really, really well-crafted phishing email. And had he proceeded and paid this invoice for whatever amount it was. I don't even remember. You know, it would have easily just been a loss of, you know, several hundred dollars or several thousand dollars, whatever the case may be. And it's that's the thing. I mean, he's a financial guy that works in a technical organization that has his level of maturity was enough, maybe not to just, I mean, to know it was fraudulent, but at least it's like, well, I don't even know. Yeah, it looks suspicious. I don't even know who this is. He was cognizant enough to know that, okay, this is not a client.
Right.
I don't recognize this vendor. I don't recognize. So, you know, it was pretty obvious, but somebody get along and come in and say, hey, well, this is, you know, the cleaning company that you know, use and so on and so forth. And it could be a different deal. But
so now you're taking something that goes from an educational standpoint to how do you enforce to prevent? So like, I think about like nuclear launch codes, right? So like if your CFO, in order to pay an invoice, has to engage to get the second key and he sends it to you, all of a sudden you're like, well, wait a second. This is where we're now like, hey, I'm not turning my key. I don't agree with what this is. And I think it's, I don't want to say it's easy in the one you just described, but I think this is one that no one wants to part with money when it's in the context of like paying invoices, like, hey, let's make sure did I already pay this invoice. I feel like I already paid this invoice kind of thing. Right. I think we're more likely to be suspicious on invoicing from, especially from a vendor standpoint. And we see a lot of this play out. If we're remotely paying attention to the news, the vendor world of things that have been compromised and then targeting solution providers. But what about things like taking care of employees? I've seen this one, like the email that says, hey, as a result of going through a divorce, I need to separate out bank accounts. Can you please change the direct deposit to this account number? And the one that I actually dealt with was interesting because they actually didn't spoof the person's email. It was legitimately just a different Gmail account where they put a name on it. Like there was no spoofing involved. They had enough information to go and target. And it happened and direct deposit took place and it was probably a 60-day process. And what was interesting in the live and learn for me from that particular case was the end result was like, well, instead of truly solving this problem, now in order to change any direct deposits, you have to come in and have it fill out the form in person. And I thought that was interesting. So I asked the question, I go, okay, do you then ask them to produce identification? They're like, what do you mean? I go, well, you've asked them to come in person. How do you know it is who they say they are? I'm like, well, we know all of the employees that work here. I'm like, you know, 1,000 people, you know, that many people by face. I'm going to give you like, maybe, but like, if someone's really targeting somebody else, they're going to do everything in their power to at least create the illusion that you believe you know who they are, even if they have to come in person. And what to me, and this kind of goes hand in hand with like the nuclear keys, is like, why was that the answer? Like, there are ways in which this could have been solved that were far less complicated, but the knee-jerk reaction, and I think that's the part that all of us collectively have to work to avoid, is if our solution to the problem is knee-jerk and extremely complicated, we haven't solved the problem and likely we've made it worse. And that's kind of why I go back to this whole idea behind the why and the proof tied to our conversation yesterday. You mentioned leveraging a tool and I immediately went to the education space. You talked about using Kahoot. Right. Talk to me about that a little bit, because I think that obviously changes the engagement. You can force them to watch the video in order to get to the quiz. You know, they can't fast forward it, but you obviously can't stop them from staring at the screen. Those kind of things. Like what put you on this path to pick something like Kahoot as part of your training?
Well, part of it has to do with, the first time I saw Kahoot was at a conference that you and I were both at, and they used it as a...
Oh, that's right.
And an engagement at the end of the deal, a quiz at the end where they were giving away a prize or whatever.
A Quizlet.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, this is really cool. And then I was out with my family and we were doing trivia night at a local establishment. and they were using Kahoot for the trivia game, right?
Oh,
and
wow.
Like, okay, this is pretty cool. I'm really digging this. And so I'm like, getting into it and everything else. And I started talking to my wife about it. And she's like, oh, I use Kahoot all the time. Well, she's in education. She's a professor at a college. And so she's like, I use it regularly, you know? And I'm like, okay, well, this is an education system, really. And how we could maybe leverage it in multiple ways is an interesting thing. I think whether it's Kahoot or some other, you know, learning management system where you can, you know, gauge progress. You know, as I mentioned, I mean, we have started a whole onboarding thing with all of our staff. When they start with us, they go through this process. It's anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks, depending on how far they are, how quickly they proceed, and what certifications they might need out from the get-go, and so on and so forth. And just being able to have a system that tracks all that, but then building on top of that so that it is a life cycle, an employee life cycle, yeah, of training within our organization that is ongoing, constant, and, you know, tracks their progress on their certifications or whatever along, yeah, with their progress on cyber or as it relates to the framework or the trust mark that we're doing or whatever. I mean, just having something that will go through that. And I mean, there are things in our space that are somewhat LMS to a degree, yeah, that you can customize, add your own training videos and quizzes and things of that nature. But I really think that they're limited on how far you can just really build out a full program to see somebody's growth within an organization over time. And so that's the challenge. And I don't even think Kahoot will necessarily do that. I think it's going to be, you know, maybe part of the tool, but
yeah,
I don't ultimately think that it's going to be the platform overall.
You're describing an arena that I know, like, organizations like Empath are trying to address, which is like more of a learning pathway. Like, today you're in X role doing X job. What do you want to be when you grow up? Where do you want to go with what you're learning? And make it less about the mandatory, like, do these things because I said so, don't ask me why, do it anyway. And then, you know, where those challenges take you. And I think to your point, I mean, I remember even when I was working in the K-12 space, when teachers or curriculum director or coaches would say, hey, we want to implement X product or service into our curriculum and into our strategy. And questions that I learned to ask real quick on the IT and security side of things, like, what does it integrate with? What is the privacy? How do they address taking care of, you know, protecting student information? What information is it going to store? And then sometimes the more difficult question was, okay, so they go from third grade to fourth grade. Does this go with them to the next teacher? Does the next teacher get to see the historical data and be able to model and assess where the student's at and keep them on that journey to be successful? Or do they just, you know, draw a line in the sand and start over? And that was interesting because especially around the COVID window, there were a lot of products that were really solid from an education standpoint, but they weren't built for the actual school system. They were built for those that were largely coming from the homeschool space, where the only teacher they were going to have doesn't change year to year. So it didn't really have a bearing on all the sophisticated ways in which you need to have sort of that gradual progression. And I think it's interesting because I had to pull up Kahoot. It's been a while since I looked at it. And I remember when we were implementing it in the school district, you know, it was like for teachers and for students. Now, if you go on their website, it's like for professionals, for teachers, for students, for families and friends. Like, obviously, when you were doing the trivia, that was probably more family and friends than it was for professionals. The world is evolving very rapidly, and it just keeps bringing me back to, I think, helping, especially in the MSP space, helping our employees recognize that they control their destiny, right? Like, don't look at this, you know, and ask why from the perspective of why do I have to do this? Look at it from the perspective from the why, as in what is my opportunity and where can this take me? Because I think asking why questions about, if I don't understand the training you're having me go through and you explain it to me and now I understand it, I might point out a flaw in that particular training. We've seen it before. I had one where I had to go through a training. It had me sign off and agree to some things. And I'm like, well, wait a second. The policy I had to read at the end of the video to agree to the terms that was in the video are actually conflicting with each other. And they're like, what do you mean? So I walked through the three things that I found that were conflicting with each other. And like, oh my word, we have to change this because we have employees that are saying yes to the policy, signing it. And they're signing something that is actually contradictory to the video that they had to watch and the quizzes that they answered all the questions to. So like, there's so much opportunity of like making sure that employees aren't just going through the motions of doing it because you said, well, this is part of our security awareness training. We have to do it. Don't do it. Like, then we get dinged on whatever assessment CompTIA is giving us for the trust mark. And I don't want to get dinged, right? Like, do you have, are those conversations happening in your organization today? Like, do you get the whys and like the glazed look and they're like, well, okay, I'll do it, whatever.
Well, I think most of the whys with our staff have been answered as to why we're on the trek that we're on from a, you know, cybersecurity standpoint.
We need to do this.
Being audited, third, but you know, being held accountable as an organization to
sure.
what we're responsible for. And so I think that everybody is on board with that. I don't know that everybody has caught the vision because it's relatively new with me and all these things that we're talking about. Look, we're a small company, 12 employees or whatever, but I don't want to stay that way.
Sure.
And when I look at, you know, the competition for, you know, our employees moving on, whether it's in a, you know, large corporate environment or whatever, you know, I mean, the amount of money that those companies are able to spend on what we're talking about today is ridiculous. I mean, there are programs out there that are doing corporate, not just cyber training, cyber security wellness training, skills training, you know, role-based training on their job in the company and so on and so forth.
Sure.
You know, they're spending, you know, what, $300 to $500 a year per employee to use these systems.
Right.
And that's a lot of money. I mean,
yeah. Right.
You know, I mean for us, that's only, you know, I mean, at 12 employees, say that's, you know, what, $360 bucks a month, right? I mean, it's not insurmountable, right? But then you got the time to, you know, put in the content and build out the programs and all the other stuff that's there. Some of these already have those higher, more expensive ones already have material and content, but you know, it's very specific to that. But to make it specific to your organization, you have to create it yourself, right?
Well, so that's where it gets more expensive. Like I've seen like with CyberHoot, where you can, you know, build your own program, right? Like you can pull content in from third party. Here's the Vimeo link. I'm going to make my own quiz.
Yep.
And I think we're quickly approaching that being almost a requirement anymore. Like I can't just say, oh, fill in the blank vendor product. That's an education, set of education content or a catalog of content, because unless that content's evolving fast enough to keep up with me and the needs of my employees, and it's just a content library, it doesn't actually give me the learning objectives and the outcomes that I'm hoping to achieve as my company matures, both from a culture standpoint and from, you know, cybersecurity being sort of a core focus of that. I actually didn't see this coming when we started this conversation from yesterday, but it's definitely opened my eyes to some of the challenges that we have. And I think for anybody listening, you know, you're dealing with skills and awareness training as part of a framework, part of the trust mark, part of the things that you're pursuing to be successful as you tackle cybersecurity or even other parts of the organization that may be tied to like learning QuickBooks or any number of vendor products and services. But I think if you don't have a true why, that gets into what you said before, like, well, we're all doing this journey together. We're on the same journey. And then that kind of goes into that proof component of how do I know that Jim is working towards that end goal? Like, hey, we're going to be 500 employees in 2029, whatever it might be. Like you might have a growth structure tied to that. And it's like, okay, what do I have to do for all of my employees to be equipped? You know, do I need to have them go through things like the Working Genius or, you know, other learning paths that actually develop the ability to learn and collaborate, knowing strengths and weaknesses that obviously when it comes to security could go hand in hand as well, right? So, whoa, that means time's up. Like we're supposed to be done. Like, so with that, the bell ringing on us, you know, we have hit the 30-minute marker. I'll stop rambling on learning paths, but Jim, any last thoughts to share with the audience? Because I think this is where I would go, that deep thought process of saying, does my organization understand the why? And if we look at the proof today, does it reflect our why?
I think my final thought on this whole thing really is that when we're looking at the CIS framework or really any framework, whether it's talking about control, you know, whatever it is for security awareness training, there's the check the box section of it. But then if you look at it, it's so much deeper. It's kind of like Control 4 and secure configurations, right? Control 4 and secure configurations. It's like boom, 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 7 controls, safeguards, and you're done, but you're really not, because there's so much more. Right. There is so much more to do. And I just challenge everybody that's listening. It's like, you know, go beyond what the requirements are, because, you know, the requirements are there to provide us with a base, you know, a foundation of what we're trying to accomplish in the overall. And so just dig a little deeper.
Well, I think that pretty much sums it up, and I don't have anything else to add other than thanks, everybody, and have a great week.